Well, I'm not sure a spoonful of sugar will make the medicine go down, but I'm also sure aspartame won't do it as well. Aspartame, as a matter of fact, is a sugar substitute, frequently used in products like diet soda, some foods, even medicines. Unlike sugar, aspartame is a non-carbohydrate-based product, so it contains virtually no calories. Aspartame is approximately 180 times sweeter than sugar. The product is a result of an accidental discovery in 1965 by James Slater, who was a chemist working for G.D. Searle, who was working on a drug to prevent ulcers. When he made aspartame from aspartic acid and another substance, he noticed its sweet taste. The rest is history. Tonight we talk about aspartame, its potential dangers, why it's on the market, and how do you get it off. In a moment, Dr. Betty Martini joins us on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Throughout the night, we'll have a number of guests for you coming in each half hour. Dr. Betty Martini will be with us for the entire evening. She's the founder of the Global Volunteer Force Mission Possible International, which educates the public on aspartame and warnings of its dangers. She's been doing this for 14 years with operations in most states and over 30 countries of the world. She works with the world experts who write the reports that you'll find on her web pages that are linked up now at coasttocoastam.com, spending 22 years in the medical field before this and created the first health delivery system in the United States. Already, she's got an effort underway with a group, with the mission, a possible group in Hawaii, a non-for-profit organization, which is aimed at eliminating the use of aspartame in beverage, food, and pharmaceutical products. They have begun mobilizing their campaign. Last year, the group got an anti-aspartame bill introduced in both the Hawaii State Senate and House of Representatives, but it didn't go anywhere. This year, the group will reach for the same goal of getting the bill passed, which would eliminate the use of the ingredient in the state. Here she is, Dr. Betty Martini. Hey, Betty, how are you? Welcome back.
Oh, thank you, George, and good morning, as it is here in Atlanta. So happy to be back on the show.
I decided tonight to put my neck in the noose and do a complete show on this substance and go right toward big business this time, Betty, but I think it's very important.
I do, too, and in fact, I've been getting a lot of emails already from a lot of sick people, and it's such a great opportunity to get them well and let them know the actual facts, because one of the worst things about this whole situation is people think that it's an additive, you know, and it's just masquerading as an additive, whereas it's an addictive, excito-neurotoxic carcinogenic drug, and it's interacting with all their drugs, and so they... we have a global epidemic. People are sick everywhere, no matter where you lecture, no matter where you travel. You run into people that can't get well until they find out what the culprit is.
I have noticed, Betty, that there are a number of studies that are warning of the dangers of aspartame. And then there are some studies out there that say that it hasn't been proven, that it in small quantities doesn't hurt human beings. How do we get such varying different studies?
Well, you're going to hear from Dr. Walton later on, and he's the one that did for 60 Minutes the research on that, and he showed that 92% of all independent scientific peer-reviewed studies showed the problems that it caused. And that if you eliminate six that the FDA had something to do with, you're talking about 100%. And it's impossible to do a study on aspartame, which is a poison, and have it show safety. And that's the reason that the FDA originally tried to have Searle, the original manufacturer, indicted for fraud. And the only reason they didn't is that both U.S. prosecutors, Sam Skinner and William Conlon, hired on with the defense team, and the statute of limitations expired. But the Breslau report that we have on web shows that they got caught, and they were removing brain tumors from rats and putting them back in the study, and the rats would die, and they would resurrect them on paper. So everything was documented. They simply couldn't get aspartame to show safety. In fact, Dr. Walton himself, the decided to do a study, and the institution had to stop it. The administrator was in the study, and he had a retinal detachment and has lost vision in one eye. So every time there is an attempt to do, you know, human studies, you get all these problems, and they're documented. So what you have to do is look and see if the manufacturer was the one who funded it and controlled it, or whether it was independent. And that's how you know the difference.
We will be telling you how aspartame got approved by the FDA in an incredible story that will just rock your world, and you'll realize how big business gets things done when they need to. Aspartame seems to be in all kinds of ingredients now these days, Betty. How big is the business? I mean, how many dollars is this thing bringing in for companies?
Well, it's a billion-dollar business, and the reason is that it's addictive. And it's interesting that just recently there was an article about Coke going back. They had put Splenda in some of their products, and that they were going back to aspartame. And I knew that that would happen. One of the reasons we need to get it banned is because that people using, like Diet Coke, they crave it. And so they are so highly addicted that when you change the ingredient, they don't use it anymore, and they don't want to lose the money. And it's a cash cow because of that. And the reason is there is free methyl alcohol in it, which causes chronic methanol poisoning. This affects the dopamine system of the brain and causes the addiction. And sometimes you could put a stack of medical records, the FDA report, the congressional record in front of people that are addicted, and it doesn't make any difference. Interestingly, I was talking to Dr. Bill Deagle about it one time, and he said, well, he says it affects the frontal cells, and it's just like talking to somebody with a lobotomy. Even though they know all the dangers, that it's a global epidemic, that they can go blind, get MS, lupus, Alzheimer's, all these different things, they're too addicted to give it up. The reason that we now have started aspartame detox centers to try to help the people.
Betty, we've got a lot of people who listen to this program from all walks of life and all age brackets. Specifically right now, I want to ask you a question, and I want you to address the younger people who are listening to this program right now. And you know, they're from 25 to 28. I mean, they're in a very young bracket where they're probably saying right now, come on, George, I'm not sick. Come on, why are we talking about this stuff? I want you to address that question to them.
Well, because it's slow and subtle, and people do not, they think that they're just getting older, and they don't realize these are the symptoms of aspartame. For instance, the FDA lists 92 symptoms. Number one is headache. Then they get dizziness, change in mood quality, abdominal pain, change in vision. And these are, but they don't associate them with aspartame, which is why we tell them, take the 60-day no aspartame test and see for yourself. And then all of a sudden their headaches disappear and their joint pain disappears and their insomnia disappears. And they don't realize that. But what I tell young people is, what is so concerned is that aspartame, first of all, is an endocrine disrupting agent. So many people sipping diet pop who may want to go get pregnant, they can't because it stimulates prolactin and changes the menses and causes infertility. Then they get off of it and get pregnant, and it's an abortifacient, and they could lose the baby. And if the baby survives, they can have birth defects, and it can be building up in their system while they're young. And so many people have told me, for instance, you know, they grew up, they wanted to get married and have families, and they never were able to have children, or they lost their children. And it's even though it's slow and subtle, nobody gets away with aspartame. The worst of it is, for instance, I flew to Barcelona and talked to Dr. Alemany, who did the CROCO study, which shows that the formaldehyde converted from the free methyl alcohol embalms living tissue and damages DNA. When you damage DNA, you can destroy humanity. In Dr. Roberts' medical text, he has a page on Priam bombing. And he looked at me and he said, Betty, this can kill 200 million people.
Jeez.
I said, well, it already has. And some people have lost as many as 8 babies because of the miscarriages from it. You know, they tell women, don't use alcohol. Well, what do you think's in aspartame? But wood alcohol that they're using while they're pregnant, and they don't even have the decency to put a warning on there. And as far as young people are concerned, also, it when they're in school, they can't think, they have memory loss. It reduces, IQ. In fact, I was so concerned about the behavioral problems and psychiatric problems that it is causing kids, because our kids today are medicated instead of educated,
yeah,
that I asked all the experts to write new reports on how it destroys the brains of our children. And I put that in a actually, Don Harkins helped us with this. They were going to put out a brochure, put it in one Microsoft document called Report for Schools. And last year for Aspartame Awareness Weekend, we emailed that to schools, Board of Educations, all over the world to try to get them to take it out of the schools to prevent, you know, what's happening to the kids.
What happened, Betty, that got you on this bandwagon so many years ago?
Well, actually, George, I was trying to retire. Actually, my husband had, he had his own business, and he said, now I'm going to show you the world. And about that time, he had a friend who appeared to be dying. He had Parkinson's. And you'd get close to him, and his arms and legs would kick out. Think of Michael Fox. And a physician told me at the time, he said, did you know that aspartame was a deadly poison? I said, well, I heard about it. So I asked to be referred to the world expert, Dr. H.J. Roberts. That's how I met him. And he said he's probably drinking a Diet Coke and taking his L-Dopa, and it's interacting. I said, you mean to tell me that this product called an additive interacts with drugs? He said, yes, you better get him off of it right away. It actually can precipitate Parkinson's. And as soon as I did, about 4 days later, all his reactions stopped, because that's exactly what he was doing. And I read Dr. Roberts' first book and found out, you know, that it precipitates and mimics MS and seizures. And I'd get people off of it. They'd walk out of wheelchairs. Their seizures would stop. And so we're religious people, we're witnesses, and my husband said, well, you know, I'll give you my retirement funds because we can't have this knowledge and let people who have no earthly idea it's a poison, we don't have the billions to fight these criminals. And so I used his return instead of seeing the world, we've been trying to save it, and set up this global volunteer force, which is now in 39 nations, with everybody working free just to educate the public and to save lives and to try to get it banned.
Is it true that aspartame is responsible for 75% of the complaints that the FDA gets?
Oh, yes, or more. And they admitted that themselves. In fact, in congressional hearings, and we put them on mpwhi.com, both congressional hearings, it was admitted that the FDA was getting so many complaints that they were sending the victims to the AIDS hotline because they couldn't take all these complaints. And that's why there was congressional hearings and testimony of people, I mean, pilots having seizures. There is, also the scientists were speaking out. Dr. Roberts was there, and there was actually three. And the FDA themselves, the FDA toxicologist, testified against the FDA. And I can quote it from, you know, by heart, where Dr. Adrian Gross said, you know, this violates the Delaney Amendment, which says you can't put anything in food that you know will cause cancer. And therefore, the FDA should not have been able to set an allowable dose. And if the FDA violates its own law, who is left to protect the public?
Absolutely. Betty, I touched briefly on the accidental discovery of aspartame in 1965 by the chemist at G.D. Searle. Tell us exactly, what is this stuff, aspartame?
Well, first of all, it has three components: aspartic acid, which is an excitotoxin, a product that literally stimulates the neurons of the brain to death. Dr. John Oney, who tried to prevent its approval, founded the neuroscience excitotoxicity, and Dr. Russell Blaylock wrote the book on it. And then it is, it's got 50% phenylalanine, which is a neurotoxin when it's isolated, and it floods the brain, lowers the seizure threshold, and depletes serotonin, which is causing all these psychiatric behavioral problems. It is bound by a methyl ester, which is immediately becomes methanol and then converts to formaldehyde and formic acid. Then the molecule breaks down to diketokiprazine, which is a brain tumor agent, so that the whole molecule is literally poison. And it is, Dr. Deagle actually saw it being made. It is genetically engineered on E. coli bacteria. It's a toxic sludge. I think that if anybody could see these vats of this genetically engineered sludge before it's pressed into a white powder, nobody would ever touch it. So there's nothing safe about it, and the propaganda is absurd. They'll tell you this is the building blocks of life, these amino acids. But, you know, when God makes it, there are 20 proteins in, there are 20 amino acids in protein, and they are in balance. And so they don't cause this problem. But when they're isolated, they do. And they'll tell you there's more methanol in oranges than there is in aspartame. But what they don't tell you is in oranges, it is accompanied by ethanol, which is the antidote to methanol toxicity, and takes it out of the body. It is also bound in nature, and whereas in aspartame, it is free. It's bound to pectin in nature. So when you write the FDA and tell them this is free methyl alcohol, they won't even answer you, even if you send the letter certified mail. Dr. Roberts has tried that for years. So, in fact, according to The Ecologist, which is a very prestigious magazine, that came out in 2005 and told the whole story in a 17-page cover story, it starts out by saying that aspartame was actually listed with the Pentagon in an inventory of prospective biochemical warfare weapons submitted to Congress.
It's all about the money. Is saccharin in the same category as aspartame?
Not really. I wouldn't want to put it in my mouth simply because it's a coal tar product. It's a chemical. But it's been on the market 100 years, so it's, you know, it's not going to do what aspartame is doing. But, you know, on top of everything else, now they've got Splenda, which is a chlorocarbon poison, liberates free chlorine. And, you know, they and fortunately, just like sugar, is made a safe sweetener, so there is something out there for people to take that's safe. And that's what we're doing this weekend, Aspartame Awareness Weekend, as we've written a flyer to try to get these poisons off restaurant tables. And so there's, you know, even your sugar alcohols, if you use too much of it, you get cramps and you get bloating and diarrhea. And so and people are using them because they think, oh, well, we've got this epidemic of obesity and I want to lose weight. But aspartame is low-cal weight gain.
Absolutely. Betty, James Turner is going to join us in just a moment, a consumer affairs consultant. He will tell us the incredible story of how aspartame got approved by the FDA. Joining us now is James Turner, serving as a consumer affairs consultant to Governor John Gilligan of Ohio, special counsel to the U.S. Senate Select Committee on Nutrition and Human Needs, and the Government Operations Subcommittee on Government Research. James wrote the book, The Chemical Feast, the Nader Report on Food Protection at the Food and Drug Administration, the book being hailed by Time magazine. Here he is with Betty Martini. Hello, James. How are you, sir?
Hi, George. How are you?
Good.
Glad to be here.
Good to have you with us here as well. And Betty, you jump in anytime, okay?
Okay. I think Jim knows the story so well. He was there. You're going to enjoy this.
This is an incredible story, James, of how how things get done by big business. 1965, the chemist accidentally comes up with aspartame, and all of a sudden, what happens? Who decides, let's take it to market, we can make money with this, and then what's the process?
Well, it was an ulcer drug, and the guy working on it put his finger in it, put it in his mouth, which chemists do, and he said, my gosh, it's sweet. And the company said, we can make more selling this to millions of people a little bit at a time than we can by selling it as a drug. And so off they went and started to do things that were quite strange. So, for example, Dr. John Olney at Washington University did some studies in 1970 and showed that the chemical they were working with caused actual holes in the brains of mice, little small microscopic holes. And he had the hypothesis that this might be the kind of thing that causes mental retardation. He got the people from the company, it was Cyril at that time, to come down and repeat the experiments. They did. Their person did the experiments, repeated them, went back to the company and said, look, this stuff may be a serious problem. And interestingly enough, she disappeared from science from then on. Never heard from her again. She was gone. They continued for the next decade to do that, those kinds of things. Dr. Olney and I objected to the FDA's approval of NutraSweet. It was called aspartame at the time. We asked for and got a public hearing. I actually met with the Cyril folks before the FDA ruling in 1974, and I pointed out that these holes in the brain were going to make it very hard to get approval. They said they would get approval. I said they would never reach the market. And interestingly enough, the FDA approved it and then stayed the approval because they found so many problems in the laboratories of Cyril. They had animals that were alive at the beginning of the experiment, died in the middle of the experiment, and then were alive at the end of the experiment. There's no evidence at all in the record that can be relied upon that establishes any safety. This then went on to the point where the Public Board of Inquiry, to have the hearing that we'd asked for, was held in 1980. And they ruled that the NutraSweet product, the aspartame, should not be marketed because of the possibility that it would cause brain tumors.
Jeez.
The animal study showed brain tumors. At that point, it was 1 month before Ronald Reagan was elected president. That was in October of 1980. November of 1980, Reagan was elected president. And then Donald Rumsfeld was on the transition team for Reagan, and he was the president of the Cyril Company. And he held a meeting in January of 1981 saying to all of his Cyril folks that he was going to call in all his chips in Washington and get NutraSweet approved by the FDA.
Mm-hmm.
The new FDA commissioner, who had been a contract physician at the Department of Defense when Rumsfeld was Defense Secretary, came to the FDA, and the first act he did was to approve NutraSweet for aspartame for dry foods, and then 2 years later, his last act under his administration was to approve it for diet sodas.
And didn't he, James? It was losing in the FDA by a 3-2 vote, and the new commissioner Arthur Hayes Hull brings in another person, so the vote gets tied, and then he breaks the vote. With his own vote, did that happen like that?
Well, that's one way of looking at it. But there's an even more interesting way of looking at it, and that is that there ultimately ended being six people on the panel, and they did in fact. Three of them said they would support approval, and three of them said they would not support approval. Interestingly enough, it was unanimous that the three cancer experts said they would not approve the NutraSweet. The other three didn't supported the Public Board of Inquiry's notion that they could not prove that the fetal ketonuria problem that is recognized by everyone was a generalized population problem. Basically, what happened is all six of these people supported the Public Board of Inquiry's ruling. The Public Board of Inquiry said, okay, on this problem of brain damage, we don't see enough evidence to raise a serious problem on the brain damage.
Except for Hall.
Cancer, on cancer, we see it, we're concerned, we're going to ban it. And that was a ban. He had to overturn that ban in order to make it work, and he did exactly what you said. He read the ruling to be 3-4, 3 against. I'll break the tie, and we'll let it out.
And then
it was unanimous that the thing causes cancer among the cancer, you know, that could cause cancer among the cancer experts.
And then what happened to him, the FDA commissioner? Didn't he leave the FDA under some allegations?
He left the FDA under a cloud because he had been riding in the General Foods airplane improperly. In fact, General Foods was one of the original sponsors of aspartame, and then they dropped back because there were some serious problems in the early studies, and Cyril then ended up taking the brunt of it. But he was disciplined for riding in the General Foods plane. When I say disciplined, basically they asked him to resign before they went into a serious hearing.
Tim, would you tell them about the executive order, how far they had to go?
Well, before we do that, let's just catch up with this one point that Hayes went on to become the senior medical advisor to Burson Marsteller, the company that was the Cyril company's
PR company.
Strategist, the PR company.
Exactly.
and we talked to them about that, and we said, you know, how can you do this? And they said to us, it was really amazing, they said, all the money that he's paid comes from something other than Cyril, because we sequestered the Cyril money so he doesn't get paid by the Cyril money. I mean, now this is like Alice in Wonderland to have that sort of
it's like he was taken care of and they tucked him away somewhere.
And he has never been willing, able, or agreed to any kind of interview subsequent to that action.
Is he at the public relations company now? Is he still around?
He was only a consultant to the public relations company. That was a way of funneling money to him. No, he's back on a medical school faculty, I believe, up in New York. But Betty also just raised an interesting point, and that is that remember that the Public Board of Inquiry had ruled in October of 1980 that this stuff could not be marketed. That's a final ruling, and it is determinative of the situation unless the FDA commissioner overturns it. Well, the day that Reagan was sworn in, and the day after Reagan was sworn in, according to Jerry Goyen, who was the FDA commissioner at the time, he received a direction, an order. It was actually an executive order telling him that he was not able to make any decisions at that point, and they were going to replace him. It took about 6 weeks to replace
him. And wasn't Rumsfeld, who was the CEO of G.D. Searle, on that team, that transition team, that was going to pick the new FDA commissioner?
Absolutely he was. And Senator Metzenbaum did a thorough investigation. They cannot find out who proposed Arthur Hall Hayes for FDA commissioner. He just showed up out of nowhere. What we do know is that he was a contract physician at the Defense Department when Rumsfeld was Secretary of Defense. He was doing a couple of studies. And in fact, part of the reason that he was asked to leave the FDA was that there was a study done by the Army Inspector General that he had exposed recruits to pharmaceutical products improperly. Interestingly enough, at the time he was having his NutraSweet problems at FDA, or taking his actions, he was also proposing a significant relaxation in human testing at FDA. Basically, he was there to do somebody else's business, and when it got too hot for him, he was taken away, you know, taken out, and given a nice sinecure to just keep his mouth shut and stay out of the line.
Isn't it interesting how Rumsfeld's name, Jim, pops up in the G.D. Searle case with aspartame, with the Iraq War, with everything that just seems to have a cloud, there he is.
My sense, he actually arranged to have a meeting with me, which I did. I spent a few hours with him.
What'd you think of him personally?
Well, I did not think very much of him at the end of this meeting. It was not the end of the meeting, but 6 months later. It was about a six-month process. We had this meeting, and I said, look, we've got all this science that shows problems. You've got science that you claim doesn't show problems. Why don't we just together come up with a committee that we can agree on of scientists and have them look at all the data, your data, our data, everybody's data, and see what the data says. And he had some people on his staff that were proposing that, and he had one guy who was a science advisor who was hysterical in this meeting about not allowing that to happen. Rumsfeld maintained himself in a balanced way in this meeting, but then over the next 6 months, gradually they decided not to do the proposal that I made, not to do any looking at the data, but rather to treat the whole thing as a legal political battle. And they went ahead and fought it through legally and politically with lobbyists and so forth, and were able to basically use Rumsfeld's tools to get the thing through.
How do these people sleep, Jim?
Well, I don't think Rumsfeld has much empathy for anyone outside of his own very narrow circle. He does not value the lives of other people particularly. I don't think he even understands that's a part of what the deal is. His notion is that he was hired to turn Cyril around. It was about to go out of business.
And make money for stockholders.
And for himself. He got a $12 million bonus for getting this thing through the FDA, a personal $12 million bonus.
Just on this deal?
Just on this deal. And that's chicken feed in today's world, but back in 1985,
that's a lot of money.
A nice bit of change.
And I know some people who could live well on that, let me tell you.
Yeah, but probably not the people in Rumsfeld's class. They need more than that. But it's a shocking story to watch because we've had thousands of people call us, talk to them. We've had meetings with them. I mean, these people whose lives have been essentially ruined, from people who one woman early on was an artist who lost the sight in one eye and basically lost her career as an artist. But you talk to these people and you realize, and basically the way she found out about the harm was that her doctor couldn't understand, her eye doctor couldn't understand why she was having these vision problems. And he went through everything in her diet, in her home cleaning and products and everything that was she was coming in contact with. And it was NutraSweet aspartame that had methyl alcohol in it. Methyl alcohol is known to cause blindness.
Doesn't it also break down at a certain temperature and turns into formaldehyde?
That's exactly right. It does.
Isn't that embalming fluid?
That is. That's exactly what it is. That's exactly what it is. And it was interesting because early on, even the Soft Drink Association made noises about opposing NutraSweet because of that fact. If it gets over 80 degrees, about 80 degrees, it breaks down. And the argument that the company Cyril made to the FDA was, yes, but as it breaks down, its flavor is so bad that nobody would actually drink it. That's a cynical argument in and of itself, but also it's not necessarily true because it starts breaking down and the flavor doesn't actually get bad until after it's pretty well broken down.
Now, how did these brilliant marketeers then, how did they take this product that had no sales, that got approved by the FDA through a very cloudy way, how did they begin to market it to the soda companies and the other companies?
Well, there's a very interesting story there. There were in 1980, it was approved in 1981 for dry foods, and there began to be complaints, and there were about 600 complaints at FDA. It was only marketed in Arizona at that point as a test market, and they got about 600 complaints, and they were sent to the CDC to be evaluated. And the CDC made a very interesting statement. They said, we're looking at people who have complained about NutraSweet consumption. They consume NutraSweet and they have problems. We cannot tell you whether the NutraSweet caused those problems or not because everybody ate it. So we don't have a double blind situation. But we will evaluate what we have here. And what they found was that about 25 to 30% of the female users had problems like seizures and headaches and dizziness and so forth. And they would, the problems would go away when they stopped NutraSweet, and then when they took NutraSweet back on, the problems would come back. So they made some very interesting statements about the problems. Interestingly enough, after a lot of struggle and push and pull, that study was finally released by the FDA. We had to work hard to get it out. And fascinatingly enough, Pepsi-Cola, the day that study was released, Pepsi-Cola had an international, worldwide, huge blowout series of press conferences about how they were going to add NutraSweet to Pepsi-Cola. They just completely blew the story of its problems off out of the news media. Now, the important point there is that the head of Pepsi-Cola, Don Kendall, was one of the key advisors to the White House at the time, informal kitchen cabinet type advisor.
Right.
At the time that Rumsfeld was working in the White House. And in fact, Rumsfeld and Kendall had a very close personal relationship. So here you see the Old Boys Network working very, very hard, and they blasted this thing out through that that particular press briefing. It was a huge press briefing worldwide. In addition to that, they did almost simultaneously to that, a little bit before, but close to it, They sent just about every household in America got a little bubble gum balls sent to them with NutraSweet in it as a huge PR campaign. It's important to note that when Rumsfeld went to Cyril, he took three political operatives with him, people who were politicians. And those politicians did one thing which was really interesting, and that is that they, for the first time, they branded a...
By the way, we asked for a statement from various companies involved in aspartame, and nobody answered.
And it should be noted that there was a protest by the National Soft Drink Association before all this happened. So all of a sudden... they changed their mind after protesting. That's in the congressional record.
Well, the interesting thing there is that when they protested, which was in the early 70s, 73, 74.
And also, didn't they ask the FDA in 83 to delay approval of aspartame? The National Soft Drink Association went to the FDA and said, don't put it in yet because we want further testing. So somebody got to
earlier. In 83. They actually approved it. It was actually approved in 81. And before that, the soft drink people had said, look, I think we're going to have some problems here. And what's interesting is that the heavy influence in the Soft Drink Association at the time there was the objections was Coca-Cola. But then the balance of power kind of shifted to Pepsi-Cola in the Soft Drink Association, and basically Pepsi signed on as the great promoter of NutraSweet. Then what happened is the deal that Cyril ran was so tough that it was virtually impossible to put a diet soda on the market without NutraSweet in it. And you might have been able to have a competition between saccharin and NutraSweet, except that they created a deal where the product they put in was part saccharin and part NutraSweet, so that they got their product in without having a direct competition. Then they put heavy duties on the cost of this sweetener, and there were many, many companies that were very resistant and unhappy. But ultimately, they were all whipped into shape by the market power that Rumsfeld was able to create.
Well, it's just amazing, Jim, how they can get a product like this to market and push for it and use the good old boy network to do it. In a moment, we'll be joined with Dr. Betty Martini and Stephen Fox, who's very active in consumer protection. Thank you, Jim Turner. We'll be back in a moment. Wow.